your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, August 24th, 2025, as we record this new episode. Yes, football season has arrived. College football started what's called week zero, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the National Football League has concluded their postseason schedule. While many of us are getting ready for football, there's still plenty of baseball going on. And for White Sox fans, maybe more hope after this weekend series against the Minnesota Twins. After winning 2 out of 3 against the Twins, the White Sox are 47-83 on the season. But as Chuck Garfine pointed out on the Chicago Sports Network pregame show on Sunday, the 2025 White Sox have already scored more runs than last year, even with 32 games left to go. That's a great sign. And if you are wondering about the steak dinner bet, at the pace the White Sox are scoring runs, I'm losing that bet before the Chicago Bears kick off week one. But remember, after 97 games before the All-Star break, the White Sox are only on pace to score 544 runs. Since the All-Star break, we've seen a surge in run production that makes me wonder if the White Sox are now truly a 5 runs per game type of offense. Could next year be a serious shot of being 500 or better? I'll be joined by James Fegan and Jim Margulis in a moment as we'll talk about that topic. We're going to give Davis Martin his flowers as he's been really good to his last 2 starts. And more glowing about Colson Montgomery. We'll also preview the upcoming Royals series and take a look around Major League Baseball. First, let's hear from White Sox manager Will Venable. His first year managing, he's on pace to finish with a record of 58-104. Obviously not great. Probably doesn't help that the White Sox are underachieving their expected win-loss record by 10 games. But Venable shared how he's tracking progress this season, and if the White Sox are doing enough.
Yeah, you know, we talked about coming into the year that we were going to, measure our progress in different ways. And certainly the most important way is going to be wins and losses. And certainly we haven't won as many games as we'd like to. And having said that, there are a lot of things, under the hood that we're really proud of. And starting with our group of players and, connections that they've built amongst themselves, the team identity that they've built, the way they go out there and compete every day. So, a lot of good stuff to point to that we're really proud of. No, you have to go out here and there's things that you do on an individual basis and, the preparation and things that you're working on your own are certainly important. But the special thing about baseball is that you have to go out there and accomplish things with your teammates. And the process for that is one that is something that we all like to partake in, and to see these guys and to do it the way that they have has been special to watch.
One of the more fun progressions we've seen this season is Colson Montgomery, who now has 13 home runs this season and has a home run in 3 straight games. In 55 games with the Charlotte Knights, Montgomery only had 11 home runs, so he's already exceeded his AAA total in the majors in 13 fewer games. Venable talked about what he's seen from Montgomery as pitchers begin to counter and attack his swing weaknesses.
Really pitch to pitch with him, and I think that he's in a really good spot where he's seeing the baseball and slowing things down, and so you do see the in at bat adjustments. Adjustment from day to day. He's done a really nice job just being in tune with himself and his swing, and I think that's a good place to start. So we can go out there and make sure that he's putting quality at bats together regardless of how he's being attacked. What it takes to be a major league player is you're going to go through some tough times and you have to figure out how to get back on track, and Colson having the experience of doing that in the minor leagues this year and going to Arizona, he's well positioned to handle this stuff, and I think that's what has kind of separated him in his ability to make some of these adjustments. Is it's unemotional. He just goes out there and just tries to take good swings and play good defense, and he's keeping it really simple.
Our James Fegan asked Montgomery post game about his swing approach, which is a focus on being short to the ball.
Being short to the ball is one of the biggest things for me, just because long levers and usually when you're you're not short to ball, you're trying to hit homers, and you're just getting big, and you're swinging harder than what you need to be. So my biggest thing is just low effort, short to the ball, and it's like I'm just trying to touch it. You know, when I feel like I'm just trying to touch it, my effort level is lower, and I'm able to see the ball a lot better.
So let's talk more about this White Sox offense. Post All-Star break, and of course, Colson Montgomery. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporters James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. The White Sox offense continues to stay hot. We talked about it in our previous podcast episode. Yes, we were very concerned about the White Sox pitchers running out of gas, but this is another offensive surge that we've seen, the second one post All-Star break for the Chicago White Sox in 2025. They have scored 45 runs in their last six games. They've scored 180 runs 33 games post All-Star break. You do the math, that's an average of 5.45 runs per game, and they've scored five or more runs in 18 of their 33 games post All-Star break. So James Fegan, what if the White Sox offense is legit? A legit five runs per game type of offense. Does that change the calculus of this White Sox rebuild?
If they were like a top offense in the league all of a sudden overnight, yeah, sure, they probably would need to think about loading up the pitching staff for their playoff run. Five runs a game is a lot. What if Chris Getz encountered a magical unicorn in the forest and it pledged to grant him three wishes? Like, surely that would change the timeline of the rebuild in some fashion. Maybe he just like, you know, give two infrastructure wishes and it would still be a gradual thing. I don't know, but that's a high bar to set. Like, they've been promising. Things are looking good, especially for Caro and Teal, and certainly Colson Montgomery doesn't get on base every at bat, but you know, when he connects, it goes 450 feet. That's a neat trick. So still some things to figure out for next year. Still want to know, like, who's going to get second base reps? Is it going to be like, is Lenin Sosa like a second baseman going forward? Is Chase Meidroff not getting hot since really like the first half going to linger? Curtis Mead, but I think there's interesting pieces. There's encouraging stuff, but I don't think we're considering a five runs per game offense just yet.
Jim, how about you? Are you a believer? Are you buying the second offensive surge post All-Star break?
I think it's more a reflection of where the Twins pitching staff is right now. We saw what happened, and, you know, Hurston Waldrop is pitching very well. Like, he's not only shutting down the White Sox, but like, he had the splitter he could go to at any time. You saw what it looked like when they were not facing a fastball-centric attack. Even like Zebby Matthews, the first game, like, he was able to mix it up enough to where they needed to see him three times before they really started paying off with their contact. And, you know, fortunately, the Twins, they needed him to go three times through, and Colson got him before he exited. And so, like, they were able to hang up four on him. But over the last two games, where it was Abel and it was Bradley, and they could not locate breaking balls for strikes, and eventually they saw enough breaking balls missed to where it was just fastball or nothing. And when Colson came up to the plate with the bases loaded and Abel missed with the curveball wide, I was thinking like, oh, he's got to be looking fastball. Like, there's nothing else here besides like fastball middle or like middle in wherever like his red zone is. And sure enough, like, he got one, hammered it out, and like the ending wrote itself. So I would say that this offense now is like a more professional unit, and it's been a while since the, you know, anybody could use that word to describe them. It was very much like right-handed. You could basically have a paint by numbers attack by them if you're right-handed and have a pretty good chance at neutralizing them or shutting them down entirely. So the balance is there. The fact that like they have legitimate lefties with, you know, not only Montgomery, but Teal and Talkman, to have like scattered throughout. Benintendi, you know, he's struggling right now, but even then, like, he's a lefty who makes righties think. I think this is what gives the lineup like a far more potent feeling. I think guaranteed right field, or right field, I should say, with the wind blowing out against a bad pitching staff, like, will make them look better. So I think, like, this series against the Royals coming up, that it has something to play for, has a pitching staff and run prevention unit that's pretty good, top to bottom, or you know, can't easily be game planned against and just shut them down the last time. Like, this should be a good test for the maturity of this offense and how good of a bet they can be from series to series. But I think in terms of being able to take care of business, I think they are able to do that in a way that they haven't been able to do since, like, the bottom fell out.
Yeah, it's been 2 big weeks post All-Star break, right? Pittsburgh and Tampa. I don't think anyone saw that coming. As a matter of fact, there really wasn't much evidence to support the theory that the White Sox offense would blow up the way that they have post All-Star break. After the first 97 games, the White Sox were only on pace to score 544 runs this season. But post All-Star break, I mean, this is just,
Would
it's
that
too
allow
much
you to
to
win the
ignore.
bet, or no?
I'm not going to win this bet. As I
But
mentioned in the
were they
intro,
tracking toward that? Is this like the obsession of a heartbroken man that you're parsing through this the way you are?
this happen to me? No, this is like the best outcome, though. The best possible way to lose out on a $500 plus steak dinner.
Is there a threshold to where, like, he wins two steak dinners because he ran up the score so severely?
Now, can he do like a
Okay.
double or nothing on a run total for like September or something?
That'd be more me begging for a double or nothing. The thing is, knowing my friend Beefloaf, he would totally honor a double or nothing, and that would go incredibly poorly for me. But this is, it's too big of performances to ignore. And I made on Twitter, and I'll share the graph on Sox Machine, the podcast post, just visualizing the runs scored by the White Sox in each game this year. Just made a bar graph. And it is clear that this offense has radically changed since the All-Star break. Almost 59% of the games in the first half of this season, the White Sox scored three or fewer runs. Since the All-Star break, it's below 40%. Like, that is a radical change. And if they are going to be more competitive, an inch closer to being 500, James, before the All-Star break, I would say this is going to have to be really boring baseball. I hope you love 3-2, 4-2 type of games, because this offense is going to continue sputtering, and the White Sox are really going to have to lean on Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz and their pitching magic and see what Hagenstam and Noah Schultz can do. Well, now my mindset has changed since the All-Star break. They're just going to be bashing. This is the 2000 White Sox, baby. They're going to score more than 800 runs next year. They may give up more than 700 runs next year again, but this offense puts them at a better level of respectability, in my opinion. And I guess this is my new source of being optimistic about the White Sox moving forward. First half, it was about the pitching staff. Now I'm more optimistic about the offense.
I one like we're seeing like one with like Montgomery's breakout, like so much stuff is just not stabilized yet. Like it's encouraging that this is going well, but I think like where Montgomery is at, not that like Montgomery's power is like obviously very convincing, and it's like matured into like probably elite in the majors, at least raw power, in a way that I feel like people are still adjusting to seeing actualized at this much. But we're probably like as far into like his tenure that like feeling like Chase Meidroff at this point was like everyday second baseman leadoff man sort of thing. And now it's more like, well, is he going to be kind of in the mix with Lenin Sosa and other guys? So I think we're still kind of figuring out like what everyone's norms are in a way. And if one thing kind of figuring out going forward next year's offense is like, is there a clear place where we see them adding? Like, if Luis Robert is back because his trade value has not drastically changed over the second half, or Andrew Benintendi is still under contract, and you have kind of all these infielders that are in the cycle, you probably want to keep Lenin Sosa around, or unless he's something valuable that you can trade. Where's kind of the big hole where you see them maybe looking to improve this offense from the outside and like could bring in somebody who's like a significant regular that you give them a position. So I don't know, is that making some of their corner guys like Tauchman available in the offseason and considering like a real right fielder, not like Tauchman's not real, but like a multi-year solution in free agency? I doubt it. Could they find something in trade if they're willing to put one of their catchers in the market or are just generally advancing their veterans that they still have? I don't know, but like I don't see like necessarily a clear path to where they'd add like a significant bat. So this is kind of what you assume they're operating with next year, and we're still kind of finding out like where the regression end point is for a lot of them. I think they can continue this in any form. Like obviously it's very encouraging, but like 5 runs a game, really?
They've done it in more than half the games they played in the post All-Star break. I'm usually with you,
More than half the
James.
games the post All-Star break related to a whole season.
James Fegan, I'm usually with you on the being logical, being reasonable, being on the hater train. But I'm not hating on this right now. Okay? This is the part of the White Sox in a long time that I'm like, I'm shocked. Like, I want the Colson Montgomery white case, the white paper, and somebody the case study. I combine those two, the white paper case study. I need the Colson Montgomery case study because I was hating on the idea of Montgomery being called up, Jim, before he did, because he was not hitting in Charlotte. And my thinking has always been, man, if your OPS is 7-11 in Charlotte, come on. You're not going to do anything in the majors. So far, Colson Montgomery in 42 games has 13 homers and 36 RBIs. Yeah, the on-base percentage is not pretty. It's .288. But that slugging percentage, Jim, is .541. And that's powering his OPS. His 162 game pace, 50 home runs and 139 RBIs. Do the White Sox screw up, Jim, not having Colson Montgomery as the opening day shortstop?
Like Miguel Vargas, I think it's about the journey. Like we talked about Vargas and how in
And I
order
didn't
to
like
get,
that idea either before the season started.
but in terms like in order, everything came together when he changed his hand position, but in order for the hand position change to actually work, he had to add weight and he had to figure out exactly how strong he was. And then he had to kind of get back in his old mechanics because he could trust how strong he was, that he didn't have to load up as much. And so he finally got there. And if he did anything out of order, it might have taken longer to get to that point, just because of how all of those steps seem to neatly fit together. So I think with Montgomery, like, yeah, the swing hole was there last year. Even the AFL when he was better, like there were still skeptics about like how much of the zone he could cover and how much that would hurt him. And so I think there needed to be, and the White Sox were kind of talking around it or making minor changes or talking like between him and his agency and everything like that, trying to get on the same page. But they're still very much like, this is, he's doing fine. Failure is good for him. Everybody goes through this. And, looking at numbers and the underlying components, just being like, I don't get it. I don't, he's not making things happen. Like there is very little action around his plate appearances against minor league pitching. There should be more. And so I think like there needed to be that come to Jesus moment. Maybe not so severe that he's striking out 41% of the time or whatever, but just there had to be a breaking point. And I think there is something to the idea, and Montgomery's talked about this, talking to Sergio Santos in Nashville last time he's here, saying like, yeah, just it's very much a case of getting to the majors was such a relief for him. And I can kind of see the idea that if he goes 0 for 4, 3 strikeouts against major league pitching, tough night. It's the best pitching in the world. Like it depends on who you're facing. Like, yeah, that'll happen, especially as a rookie. If you go 0 for 4, 3 strikeouts in Charlotte, what's wrong with you? What happened? Why did this happen? Look at the tape. Unforgivable, to somebody who already dug him a hole for himself this number. So I think having that failure and going back to Arizona with Ryan Fuller and trying to figure out like what worked, and it does seem like he didn't make any severe changes. It was what was natural for him, just but it required some discovery for that to happen. And then just being in a place confident enough to get on a heater and then using that heater to get to the big leagues and you have his natural talents resurface again in a way that even if he's an imperfect player, the strengths outweigh the weaknesses at this point. It may turn on him as pitchers get better at, you know, maybe he faces like a 2 week stretch where he's facing good pitchers, not Twins grade pitchers, and they're all like just acing him. But for the time being, like he has corrected. And I think to me, it had to take all those wrong steps because of just how long it went in Charlotte without like acknowledging that the player that he was in 2024 and then at the start of the season wasn't going to cut it.
James, do you ever recall covering a player who was just far better in the majors than they were in the minor leagues?
I mean, I would say 2020 to 2021, Adam Engel, like,
okay,
hit power in a way that there's not really minor league precedent for it.
Davis Martin?
Sure. I think it's probably pretty easy to go with pitchers because, I mean, Shane Smith right now.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
They can kind of get a tweak and take off in a way that doesn't have, like, Martin had underlying, you know, obviously ability that was keeping him afloat in, you know, the minors before he had his stuff jump up. But, you know, there's nothing that's going to look like, one, his arsenal from, like, a ball right now, or two, like, kind of the, you know, success at, you know, run prevention that he's had against this level of pitching. Oh, he's not really striking out people in a major way now, but like he didn't throw a 91 mile an hour changeup when I saw him in Kannapolis in 2019. Like how much can you say, like, you saw this as a projection for that? So I think that really happens with pitchers. I think with hitters, it's a little bit more rare, but I also don't know like how true is that of Colson. Like obviously he got himself like very highly rated for his like low minors performance, and some of it was like when he was rehabbing against levels that he had already played, but even when he was doing that he wasn't old for those levels. So there's been sights of him like crushing, maybe not with this power, but I think there's kind of a straightforward thing of like he was just super projectable big frame dude and he's gotten taller and then filled out that frame since draft night. So it makes sense when you draw it out. It does seem out of nowhere just because we saw his nadir and now what at least is an early peak, hopefully not the peak, so bunched together. It almost is kind of like a pitcher breakout more than what you normally see with how a hitter's timeline progresses.
Yeah, because, again, me hating on the idea of Montgomery being called up, I was worried, like, if Montgomery is not your future shortstop, who is? Now that question's been answered. If Montgomery gets too big or his mobility gets limited, maybe in 2 to 3 years, Billy Carlson's that answer. Or if the White Sox have the number one pick in the 2026 Major League Baseball draft, maybe it's one of the many college shortstops that could be available that they can add into their depth. But even
I feel
like
more better about his defense than like his contact rate, right? At this point, like that's like, the only thing I'd worry about is defense is like, well, does the workload like cause injury troubles? And that's, you know, that's across the bridge when you get there. Like right now, he's been healthy, but there was a point, especially like at least his first trip to the Arizona Fall League, where scouts were like, this is a left fielder. This guy's not going to stick in the dirt. And now it's like, well, maybe they'll just move him to shortstop when Billy or the third base when Billy Carlson's up because like he's not going to be that good defensively, but he seems to be fine whenever you want to put him out there. You should expect average or better at this stage from what you've seen of him.
So if we had to rescout Colson Montgomery, James, let me know if this is fair.
I mean, you have to rescout everyone all the time. That's a baseball.
Yeah, that's true.
A never what ending kaleidoscope.
What if Montgomery's profile is 40 grade contact, 70 grade power, 50 grade defense? Is that what we're looking at with Colson Montgomery?
Are you saying 70 game, like in-game power? Because then like, yes, that's obviously like a super.
I mean, he's on pace to hit 50 homers this year.
Yeah.
Okay, let's tone it down. 60. 60 grade power in-game.
Like if it's 70, he could be 30. It'll be a star. Like as far as he could be 30 hit and 70 power. Like if it's game power, because he's just getting to that much. It felt like early Ohtani was going to be something like that, but you know, now he just does everything well. Sure. Like the way the power is being actualized right now, first of all, you can easily like throw a 70 grade on the raw because of like the exit and distances you've seen
Yeah.
just statistically. But it goes without saying, I think like even if he what he's on right now seems like unsustainable, and like obviously he's gonna get pitched differently, and I don't know how much he's gonna get a lot of back foot breaking balls. People are already trying, and he's still hitting some mistakes when they miss, but like that's obviously part of like the downturn he was having before the Twins series. But like yeah, he could be, if this power that he's actualizing right now, if he was being able to maintain this rate, which would be absurd, is like a 50, 60 home run pace,
Yeah.
but he could have a 280 OBP if that was like the case, because that's enough, that's worth putting in the lineup, especially at a premium defense position. That's a really valuable player, like without saying.
So here, maybe this is also helping me fuel my crazy town banana pants optimism right now, Jim. I don't think there's enough quality pitching in Major League Baseball right now in which in a 5-game set that we analyze Colson Montgomery. He's going to face three pitchers every 5 games where he's going to do some damage. And to your point, yeah, Tarek Skubal nights, Garrett Crochet nights, those are not going to be good. Those are not going to be good for Colson Montgomery. But right now, as far as premium starting pitching in Major League Baseball, that number for me, in my opinion, continues to shrink league wide, which is why it's not watering down all of a sudden my optimism about this White Sox offense. If they are the killers of number three, number four, number five starting pitchers, great, because it seems like that is increasing around Major League Baseball, and we do not have enough aces to go around in baseball. So at least the White Sox offense is crushing those guys.
Yeah, and that's why I think like Kansas City will be like a good
Good
test of
point.
kind of
Yeah.
going back between the two extremes, because against Kansas City and Kauffman, he was 2 for 13 with a double and 5 strikeouts, no walks. And then, he had a couple 0 for 3s against Atlanta. So like he's had some ups and downs. And I think like the Royals, for example, like they have good pitching, they have good defense, they have a good bullpen when they can set it up, like when they have a lead. Like it's a pretty tough top to bottom experience, and you probably won't get like a Zebby Matthews the third time through, or kind of two rookies figuring it out. So I think like I'm looking forward to the series. Like I don't look forward to many Kansas City series because of just the history and just the nature of their collapses, but it should be very instructive to see, like we talked about it before with the Kauffman series, of just we've seen the White Sox thrive at home. In the summer, smaller outfield, getting a lot of homers, a lot of four homer games, bigger outfield against in Kauffman in Kansas City, a lot of fly balls to the warning track, not getting those extra bases as easily, having to do more with doubles and base running and moving the chain, and they couldn't quite do that against the Royals pitching staff. So, like, I'm intrigued to see, like, change the setting, put it in Chicago, and will they have more swings that result in like a second row homer that get the offense unlocked and make the Royals sweat a bit that they didn't, that didn't happen in Kansas City. So that's, I think, there could be a, reality check for Colson just around the corner with,
Sure.
facing a good staff. But you are right. Like watching what the Dodgers are going through with their pitching staff, watching what the Astros are cobbling together with Craig Kimbrel, like him being a solution. Like this time of year, especially as pitching injuries add up and teams scramble and the trade deadline isn't there anymore to patch holes, like this is a time to eat. If the book on you is thin, and even if the book is developing on you, whether the pitchers that are actually on hand can actually execute it.
Yeah, I obviously, being White Sox fans and covering this team as long as we have, we do not want to see a Gordon Beckham 2.0 with Colson Montgomery. I think that would be the fear for all White Sox fans. We've been down this road before, Josh. Remember Eloy? Remember how excited we were about him? Or Yoan Moncada and all these guys that underwhelmed? But I'm shocked. I was a hater. And then I'm seeing this, and it's three straight homers against the Minnesota Twins. And yeah, the on-base percentage can be better, but his slugging is so impressive that I think as soon as he learns a little bit more plate discipline, he could take it up a notch. And that's already impressive for a shortstop who is above average, outs above average already in Baseball Savant. Like, he continues to answer all the tough questions that we had about his performance in the minor leagues to start this season. So I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about the White Sox so far post All-Star break, even though they're going to fall short of my 9-9 proclamation. It's all right. I forgive them.
They need to bring back the goose.
They do need to bring back the goose. They need a barometer back out there. Listen, if it's the Miller Lite landing deck, put a Miller Lite can back out there.
Yeah, they need something when Colson gets, like, they didn't have any kind of power in that direction when the goose was out there. Like, just adds a level of visual intrigue. Just like just having Triffin yell, "Will it hit the goose?" Like, such a ridiculous thing to yell, but also White Sox fans would know it. So, like, there needs to be something out there if Colson's going to be making runs at the concourse on a semi-regular basis.
It's the huge honking noise he makes every time.
Yep. That would work. The growl, not so much. But, like, if he had a goose and made a honking noise, like, hell yeah. I'm back on board. That Triffin minute is a positive one.
On Saturday, September 6th, Sox Machine and Baseball Isn't Boring are hosting a live podcast at the Remova Theater. Doors open at 4 p.m. Central Time as I'll be hosting the live pregame show, along with Courtney Finnecombe, chatting about this offensive surge from the White Sox, what was our favorite things about the 2025 season, and what the White Sox need to do this upcoming offseason to be more competitive in 2026. After the pregame show, we'll be hosting a live watch party of the White Sox vs. Detroit Tigers game. Watch along with us while enjoying the wonderful new food menu from the Remova Grill. And don't forget about the new beer from the Remova Brewery, including Gene Honda's new brew. The show and watch party is a free event. You can RSVP either on SoxMachine.com or RemovaChicago.com. We can't wait to see everyone at the Remova Theater on Saturday, September 6th. Okay, before we talk more about the Kansas City series that's upcoming and also quickly chat about the 2026 schedule, which is supposed to be released on Tuesday, I also want to give the dart Davis Martin some flowers, James. In his last two starts, he's been really good against Kansas City and Minnesota. Against the Twins, 6 strikeouts over 5 innings, allowed just 5 hits, 2 earned runs. Both of them were solo home runs, and he walked 1. In 19 starts this season and 20 appearances, Davis Martin now has a sub-4 ERA at 3.93. And I'm not going to say it's concern, but Jonathan Cannon and Sean Burke are in Charlotte. It is nice to see, outside of the veterans that the White Sox currently have in the starting rotation, and of course the very big surprise, Shane Smith continuing to perform well, it's nice to see Davis Martin have a significant injury, bounce back, and start building up some success against division opponents.
Yeah, he's been good. I think he's, I know he's thought of fondly by the coaching staff because his approach is very variable. He is effective against a lot of different kind of lineups. He's pretty like low maintenance. He calls his own game via pitch comm, so I think that's allowed him to like blend with the rookie catchers more easily than others. So they revamped his slider, I want to say it was like early June or late May, and that's obviously been really effective. Ethan Katz said before, I guess Sunday, he started Friday. Anyway, Ethan Katz said Sunday that Martin has like a 45% like swing and miss rate on his new slider, which gets put up as a cutter on the broadcast against right-handed pitching.
Obviously, but it's an actual slider?
It's been a slider this whole time. He does have a cutter, but he's been throwing it less. I asked him about it. He was cheesed off because he felt like he wanted that status of having 6 pitches, and he felt like it was being taken from him. But, you know, something that Katz mentioned today was that he's been using his curveball more, which is just another, like, different band of velocity that he has. Or he's not, like, overpowering with any one thing, but he has, like, he just is constantly showing different speeds and shapes. He's a kitchen sink righty, but complimentary, not derogatory, as that label can be, because he's executing as thorough as he can, I think.
Yeah, I had the thought of just when Josh had the prompt in the rundown and thinking our discussion about Lenin Sosa and how he fits in the lineup, because he can't be game planned like the other hitters because he's unpredictable. Martin kind of feels like the same thing in terms of like the way he succeeds. You can't say, hey, succeed like Davis Martin does. Like you can't say succeed like Lenin Sosa does. It's just, it's a very idiosyncratic way of going about it. But it seems to have worked for him. And when you watch him succeed in terms of, you know, getting ordinary contact and getting efficient outs and, you know, seldom laboring through innings, like, he, you know, for a while, especially before the injury, I think he's getting back to it. Like he was pretty much a lock for six innings, and you might not know how he's going to do it, but he could bounce back from a rough inning and throw like 12 pitches and get back on track. Whereas I think with, you know, Burke, we've seen, you know, him against lefties, not really having a strike grabbing pitch. Cannon, you know, it seems like he has a very like Rube Goldberg-esque way of having to set up his changeup, where if like one thing goes wrong, the entire thing falls apart. So I think like, yeah, and Smith, we're seeing like the maturity start with him being able to set up that changeup. I think he was just kind of trying to hit that changeup button over and over again and just getting further and further away from like it working with his arsenal. But I think like the way Martin's game kind of comes together without a standout pitch, aside from like the changeup, which, you know, in terms of velocity stands out, but maybe in terms of characteristics, in terms of like what it does for hitters, maybe less so, but it all kind of comes together in a way that it's very pleasing, but also makes, I think makes it simple for Will Venable on a given day or Ethan Katz on a given day that, you know, the other pitchers, Martin Perez aside, because I think Perez kind of has the same thing going for him in terms of having been around the block enough times to where he knows what he's doing, that I think helps overall.
Well, the Chicago White Sox will continue their homestand. Again, this is three games in, 17 straight games for the Chicago White Sox. But before we preview the series against Kansas City, according to Bob Nightingale of USA Today, the 2026 MLB schedule is being released on Tuesday, August 26th. That's a big day for us at Sox Machine, as we'll host another road trip next season. We already shared our short list of destinations with St. Louis, Detroit, and Toronto. Again, if Milwaukee is another weekend series, there will be another big tailgate next summer. So when that schedule comes out, you can track the weekends along with us. I'm already being told that the series in St. Louis is not favorable. It's pretty late in the season, which isn't great. If that does become true, well, again, Tuesday, the schedule comes out. We'll be looking for a weekend. We'll make that announcement on SoxMachine.com, but there'll be more coverage of the 2026 schedule on the website as we take a look at the series, the big weeks, who the White Sox will be playing on opening day, which will be on Thursday, March 26th. The Chicago White Sox against the Kansas City Royals. So the Royals are 67-64. They're 10.5 games back in Detroit. They're three games back of the wild card, so they're still within striking distance, but they didn't have that great of a time against the Tigers this weekend. They did win on Sunday, though. In their last 10, they're 7-3. Away from Kauffman Stadium, they are 31-34. And against the Chicago White Sox this season, not pretty for the White Sox. The White Sox are 2-8 against Kansas City this year. And to Jim's point earlier about the White Sox offense, in 10 games against the Royals, the White Sox have only scored 25 runs. Simple math, 2.5 runs per game. So something's got to break here. Are the White Sox going to revert back to their struggles against Kansas City, or can their hot hitting, especially at home post All-Star break, continue against the Royals? Your pitching problems for this series. All these games are at 6:40 p.m. Central Time. Monday night, Noah Cameron, the lefty for the Royals, against Shane Smith. Tuesday, Michael Lorenzen against Martin Perez. And then on Wednesday, it's Ryan Burgert against Aaron Civale for the White Sox. Hey, Jim, it's the same pitching matchups as it was in Kansas City. So surely the White Sox, having just faced these guys, will score more than 5 runs in 3 games, right?
Put me down for 6.
Damn it.
No, I will be so bold as to say they'll score 5 runs in 1 game.
Ooh.
That doesn't sound spicy, but you know, relative to what they've done against Kansas City, should be the case. But yeah, it seemed like the ballpark has been playing favorable for fly balls. So you would hope that they would just figure out a way to do that, and then also figure out a way to like keep Vinny Pasquantino from doing the same. Right. That might be the challenge, but yeah, hopefully there will be at least one slugfest in the game, or even a one-sided slugfest would work. But yeah, I like the chances of the ball flying.
James, what is the plan with Martin Perez with this upcoming start? Is he 100% back? Are the White Sox going to push him to six innings? Is he on some type of pitch count? What's the plan with Perez?
I think he'd be close to full go at this point. They didn't say like there'd be long-term restrictions on him. It was more like building him up. So he's pretty close to like a full-length start in terms of pitches the last time out. I'm sure he's pushing for more. You know, he says he wants to come back next year. I don't know if the White Sox are going to start using him like they're preserving him for 2026, like every other starter is going to be treated like, pumping on the brakes a little bit down the stretch. I think if anything, you know, with Katz talking about their bullpen having the second most innings this year, they'd be trying Martin Perez as someone that you maybe tap to in the middle of a 17 games and 17 day stretch and say, let it rip, leave it all out there, big guy. But obviously he's been effective. I don't think they're going to like crazily push him or anything, or like, you know, make him wear it. But I think, especially with how he's been pitching, seeing him out there for, you know, around the six inning, 90 pitch range seems reasonable.
Okay. So you're saying that mutual option is going to be picked up. We're finally going
to
see
mutual options are an accounting trick to defray costs of the next year. They like, literally don't exist to have like, they're a lie.
Oh, I love triggering James. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, with the ballpark playing small for the White Sox, Pasquantino, Witt, Salvador Perez, Michael, for the Royals, he's Garcia. Been having a great season. Yes, Michael Garcia, thank you. He's been having a phenomenal season. I was looking this up. I mean, suddenly Bobby Witt maybe sneaking into the AL MVP consideration as far as a finalist. Like, he's third right now in WAR and Fangraphs, Jim. I mean, Cal Raleigh is so close to 50 homers. He had 48 and 49 on the season today. Most ever by a catcher. And it's still Cal Raleigh and Aaron Judge. But someone's got to join them on the stage to finish third, and it might be Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah, somebody's got to get the that's often a position the White Sox are in when they're a finalist. Like, good job finishing third. Congratulations on the gold glove pseudo nod. But yeah, no, it's Witt was kind of unimpressive by his standards, I should say. Like, you know, the idea that he could like leap to another level, that hasn't happened, thank God, for somebody, you know, watching who he's tortured the White Sox enough to where he doesn't need to be any better than he currently is. But yeah, just seeing the sheer floor that he provides with just his range of skills, power, speed, base running, defense, and durability, like, yeah, this is what you're seeing, is just
good looks, charm, humor.
Yeah, it's what does he have that I don't? Like, let's list it off. But that's the, when you look at like the White Sox and how they project and everything like that, I think Witt's season is like the case of like, here's a superstar floor, is like, even when he's not quite clicking, he's still like an easy 4-win season. And then as soon as things start clicking together, like, oh yeah, he's MVP candidate again, or bronze medalist again.
We will be recapping this series. It's going to be a very late Wednesday for us at Sox Machine. That'll be Jim and I, as James will be wrapping up the post-game coverage at Wright Field, because we have a quick turnaround. The Yankees come into town for the Thursday through Sunday 4-game series at Wright Field against the White Sox. But we'll be recapping what happens against the Royals Wednesday night and have that ready for you guys on Thursday morning. The last thing we'll touch on, as we usually do in the Monday podcast, around Major League Baseball. And James, I don't know if there was any chatter in the White Sox clubhouse, but the devastating news about Zach Wheeler. I was really concerned because somebody dealing with a blood clot, that's a very dangerous situation. But now it's this unique thoracic outlet syndrome type of surgery that he needs to go through. He's going to miss the rest of the 2025 season. That's a big blow for the Philadelphia Phillies. What are your thoughts, or did anyone within the White Sox clubhouse chat about the sudden news about Zach Wheeler's injury?
Not really. I mean, other than kind of seeing it on the news scroll and, you know, like, oh, that sucks for Wheeler sort of reaction. The clubhouse is very intensively in, you know, their chest smashes with each other. I think, you know, we got in their post game today and like two players were like already playing, both like kind of only half out of their uniforms, with another two watching. So I don't think Zach Wheeler takes precedent over chess for this current White Sox roster.
Chicago White Sox, big chess group. Okay. I'm trying to get better on chess.com. If any of you want to whoop my ass in chess, you can play me there. I am not good. My rating is around 800 right now. Far from being a grandmaster.
Going to get destroyed by Kyle Teal or K-Teal9, just like killing you in like six moves. And
yep. And being like, what the hell happened to me? But no, on a back to a serious note, outside of the White Sox chess playing habits, Zach Wheeler, I mean, the White Sox pursued Zach Wheeler, and I know this is a joke that's passed around, but it's not really a joke because this is kind of how Jerry Reinsdorf does think about when it comes to starting pitching contracts. But I don't think that this type of injury and this type of scare should prevent like the White Sox moving forward or any team regarding long-term contracts with pitchers.
Well, he got it after their extension, after his successful run on the contract that they signed him for.
This is your second contract with the Phillies?
Right.
Yeah, this is year six.
I think like
it's been 6 years already. Wow. Okay.
If this scares them off of like signing 36-year-olds to multi-year deals, I get sure. I feel like it's the sort of deal that like just Wheeler and the Phillies would do.
Yeah. Oh, I did not know it's been that long.
If anything, Zach Wheeler is still the example of like, yes, you think that guy is rounding to his prime in free agency. By all means, like if you believe in it, go the extra mile, because maybe you're going to get somebody who like takes a leap into elite, you know, in their, you know, the back half of their career. It happens.
Yeah. No, I did not know it was that long. Okay. Again, Zach Wheeler still leads the National League in strikeouts, but with him being missing the rest of the season, as long as Paul Skeens can finish the season, Paul Skeens will lead the National League in strikeouts. So we'll see how Zach Wheeler recovers and what form that he'll be in for the 2026 season. Also, an additional note from Bob Nightingale, and I think this is pretty telling. Major League Baseball already has a contingency plan for the 2027 season. If they cannot play the All-Star game at Wrigley Field because of work stoppage, Wrigley Field would get the 2029 All-Star game. So Major League Baseball already has a contingency plan for the 2027 All-Star game. Does not make me feel great. But Jim, I'll start with you. What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
Yeah, we have to see whether Nightingale's reads on this are right, just because he did get the Field of Dreams game wrong with his scoop that what was it? Mets and Phillies, he said, and it's Mets and Twins, I think.
Yeah, in early June, and everyone in the Midwest immediately asked me, is the corn going to be tall enough for that game? And I no idea. I am so glad so many people on Twitter, I learned so much about corn today and how high it can be depending on the summer.
Yeah, knee high by the 4th of July. That's kind of the, is that right? Is that the saying?
Well, Iowans are saying it could be as tall as shoulder high in 4th of July.
Okay.
I forget. Yeah, just installed fake corn.
Yeah, probably. They were just.
Why would you install fake corn?
Corn on risers.
What's the whole point?
Because it's a game honoring a movie, which was also made up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Hating from vegan. That's going to be our new segment.
I'm just stating things that are true. Like
fun memories of the
part of the magic of Hollywood, the presentation of finding inventive ways to pretend that people are hitting balls in the corn.
Was it Dylan Cease who tried to eat feed corn?
Sure did.
Yeah. Fun memories of just unfamiliarity with corn varieties.
He was brave enough to try.
Yeah.
Knowing what would happen.
Anywho, around the league, Rockies, I saw that they're playing the Pirates. I'm thinking like, oh, this could be a way for them to be on the doorstep of surpassing the 2024 White Sox in wins, but then they get swept. So still 5 wins away from 42 wins and allowing the White Sox record to breathe. Still should beat it, but just, that's the Pirates series, like one where they could have made themselves, could have made life on themselves a little bit easier. Cubs seem like they might be past it in terms of the crisis points. Maybe, I guess we'll see if Kyle Tucker holds up, but hitting the Brewers cooling off a little bit to where like that race is tightening up, but Cubs seem like they should be safe, and all the other wild card teams, the NL, have bigger problems, or in the case of Padres, maybe just a bigger obsession with the Dodgers being right in front of them, to where like the Cubs seem like they're relatively smooth waters until October comes around. So those are two things that jumped out to me, aside from just the Central and the Royals and the Guardians. And Guardians look like frauds being exposed, and the Royals are just, I think, bump slayers. And so I think, like, I'm looking forward to the series, see if the Royals are, like, can they sustain themselves on bad teams and hope to get hot at the right time.
Yeah, the Royals this year, 25-35 against teams with a .500 record or better. James Fegan, who are you hating on around Major League Baseball?
And this is more relevant on around playoff time, but the key is I hate everyone. So thus, playoffs are a festival of delight. Just seeing nothing expand the playoffs. I'd like to see every team eliminated one by one. it'd be rapturous. I missed the World Series because I was in Spain last October. But like, really, I just missed the one series that doesn't really end in satisfying fashion for me, because I know this one team won't get eliminated, or is otherwise. But around Major League Baseball, speaking of hated teams, the Astros, as we mentioned previously, have Craig Kimbrell. Hopefully just pretending like, hey, he's back to being the dominant closer he was, or something, because they've lost Josh Hader, but they're still somehow holding off that Mariners team that got super loaded at the trade deadline. Carlos Correa has, been mashing for them in the month of August. Christian Walker, suddenly is, not dead anymore. They've gotten really good work from, Ramon Urias since the trade deadline, which is kind of a small deal that probably didn't get much attention. They're unkillable. I did their farm system for Fangraphs, and it's not great, and it's not going to provide them a lot of immediate help of any impact, but doesn't matter. Keep chugging.
Yeah, when you look at expected win loss records in the American League West, the Astros are exceeding or overachieving by 4 games, the Mariners by 2 games, the Texas Rangers are underachieving by 7 games. If you strictly just look at expected win-loss record, the Texas Rangers should have a 4.5 game lead over the Houston Astros and Seattle Mariners. And instead, they're 6.5 back of Houston and in third place. And I wonder if that's going to leave a sour taste in the mouths of everyone in Dallas and Fort Worth, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Rangers are such a weird case of... Yeah, losing Evan Carter doesn't help. So, I think, Marcus Semien, the unkillable Marcus Semien going on the injured list, wasting a pretty slept on Nathan Eovaldi season. I think, Scooble's gotten all the attention, but Eovaldi's been great. The pitching staff's been great. And just the offense keeps losing
to Grom season.
Yeah. 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 That too. Because of, just all of the parts that haven't fit at one time, Garcia struggling at various points, the offense is not fit together the way they thought. And so I think they have a lot more regrets, I think, than watching what the Astros are doing. I think the Astros have been pretty creative. The thing that bothers me about the Astros is Christian Walker. How did they go through the Jose Abreu experience and then sign another right-handed first baseman in his mid-30s and this will work out? He's better defender, sure, but just it struck me as didn't you just go through that? Maybe slightly younger, but still, that was the whole point of everybody thought the Abreu thing was a bad deal and Jeff Bagwell was poisoning the decision-making process and James Klick is out. And then they go through it again and just huh, well, Why bother?
They keep getting away with it. Well, we'll see what happens this week around Major League Baseball as far as the playoff standings. But Jim has been hinting at this for a while now, and I got to give him a cap tip that the races are not as exciting as we like them to be. It's a tight one in the National League West between the Padres and Dodgers, but the Dodgers now won the season series against the Padres, so they do have the tiebreaker. If you're a Cubs fan randomly listening to this podcast, a Cubs first round opponent is probably going to be whoever finishes in second place in the National League West between the Dodgers and Padres. That's going to be a very tough first round matchup. And if the season were to end today, the playoffs are going through Detroit in the American League and Milwaukee in the National League. What a random fun season this has been in 2025 as we inch closer to the month of September and into the last week in the month of August. But thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch the show and watch our other videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. We're also on social media on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James Fegan on social media at JR Fegan. He tweeted before we recorded this podcast that Caleb Bonnemer has been promoted to Winston-Salem, so some prospect news. And again, you can get that if you follow James on social media. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We are on Instagram. We're on Blue Sky. We're at SoxMachine.com on Blue Sky. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, you can do so by subscribing at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website, gets you access into the comments section and all of our articles. This upcoming Friday for our Veterans Committee members, our VCs, we're having a sweet night. So we're having a game at Wright Field to watch the White Sox and Yankees along with their VCs. And if you're thinking, man, that would be really cool to be part of and helping us out at Sox Machine and having direct access to James and Jim and bugging James all the time with questions that you may want to have him ask in pre and post game scrums, you can do so by signing up at SoxMachine.com.
Be Sox reasonable. Machine
Sox Machine Podcast. It's a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.